Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Annis and Stephen Brunt, and the juggernaut that is the Toronto Blue Jays in Grapefruit League action continues. 3-1, the only loss coming in game two of the Grapefruit League season in Clearwater, right down the street from Dunedin, to the Phillies. They beat the Tigers 3-1. Of course, irrelevant.
Yes, irrelevant. Wins and losses are only relevant if they're wins. Then we can count them.
That's right. If they were 1-3, it would be even more irrelevant. It's sort of relevant, though, that the good team is winning games in spring because, you know, they can't even accidentally lose these games. They're just that good. But what does matter in spring? Because I go back and forth. We do this in all sports, you know, spring training in baseball and, you know, preseason in hockey and the NBA. What is important? It's usually important, I suppose, to the young players. And it was last spring that we saw some pretty impressive stuff out of Alek Manoah. He kind of put himself on the map. Now also Simeon Woods-Richardson did as well, and I guess he put himself enough on the radar that he was able to be traded for a very good starting pitcher.
Yes.
But is that the stuff that matters most to you, Stephen?
Boy, it's a funny one, right? Because separating kind of the spring training real from real, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the main thing that matters is that don't get hurt.
That's right.
Right. So don't step on a sprinkler head.
Yeah.
You know, don't blow out your knee in a bunt drill.
That's right.
None of that stuff. So that's one thing, right? That's the number one thing.
And George Springer's doing a good job of that. He's not even playing in these things. He's like, get me away from all of them.
Just don't. Yes. Don't get hurt. Okay. So that's number one. Occasionally, you know, like there are these kind of phenoms. I'd have to go with that. I'm sure I could come up with a name of a guy who has a crazy spring and everybody goes, oh my God, who is that guy? He's, you know, and usually they hit a couple of long home runs or something. And generally, people become what you think they're going to become, right? Mm-hmm. It's very rare that somebody who's wearing number 97 on his back in spring training actually turns into a superstar. That's just
tough. Simon Pond is a guy that stands out to me. Yeah. He hit a big long home run for the Blue Jays in spring training.
And so that, you know, that can, yeah. And generally, so you have these kind of, you have these moments where you go, ooh, and then it turns into nothing. You know, but Alek Manoah, now again, he's a blue chip guy. You know, first round draft pick, all of that stuff. What we saw last year was real, right? He came into spring training, mows down the Yankees. Everybody goes and they say, "Well, that's a spring training game." No, that was real.
Yeah.
So there is that. And, you know, and then like we had Ricky Rowe on last week. I'll never, like, the year that Ricky couldn't throw strikes anymore. Like, I'll never forget that. It was awful.
Oy.
Because, you know, he was at that point, he was fighting just for a place in the rotation. And I remember they had one last kind of workout where he was pitching on the backfield against a Pirates A-ball team because the Pirates are close by. They do a lot of minor league stuff. And, you know, all of the brain trust was there behind the cage watching, and Alex was there and Beeston was there. Everybody's watching, and he couldn't throw strikes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a block, right? And it was kind of, that was the end of him, really, as a J. So sometimes something like that will happen where you go, ooh, you know, or a highly touted guy comes in. But, yeah, generally the biggest thing is health. Right, 90%, and now on a roster like the Jays this year, where it's, you know, really set, you know, we're gonna have we don't know if, unless they go to 28 man rosters,
which apparently is still in the offing. Like I know they haven't. It seems like you would want to know that. You would want to prepare as early as possible for that potential, that possibility, because the Blue Jays don't have a ton of players they have to make decisions on with the options, but they have a couple in Ryan Barucki and Reese McGuire, I think, to a lesser extent. I know they're trying to sell us on this new Reese McGuire offense thing, which, okay, sure.
No, but you only carry 13 pitchers, right? So that's the other rule. So if you look at the pitching staff, you know, take the five starters and, you know, add on the back of the bullpen guys who were there last year, plus Yimi Garcia, and then add in Nate Pearson and Ross Stripling, you're going to get to 13 pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Julian Merriweather, you know, looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, but he stayed healthy, yeah.
Yeah, so I think Barucki is the toughest one.
Yeah.
Because he's out of options and because, you know, yeah, there's something there if he can stay healthy. There's that one. You know, and then there's the, you know, whatever, the 28th guy or the 26th guy, depending on what the roster size is going to be. Are you going to carry three catchers? Probably not if you're a 26-man roster. So then there's the, you know, how are you going to use Alejandro Kirk? And then there's still a chance you could trade. I don't think you're going to see a trade between now and the end of spring training, probably. Mm. But, you know, we had that story about the Cleveland guys watching Alejandro Kirk filming him, watching how he set up behind the plate, all that stuff. So that did, you know, got tongues wagging. But that's, I think it's mostly about health, you know, or, you know, if somebody comes in obese, right? Mm-hmm. Comes in weighing 40 pounds more than you thought he did. Like, that's always a bad sign.
Yeah, that's not good. I would say, yeah, the negative story like if Nate Pearson looked horrible today, that would maybe be a thing. But him being looking good, yes. I mean, he's looked good in spring before. Like, I remember maybe it was last spring where he was mowing down the Pirates. Like, mm-hmm. Tells me nothing about Nate Pearson. Nate Pearson can get non-major leaguers out just fine, thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's nice seeing him dropping a bunch of breaking balls today because we talk a lot about his velocity, but that's a really good, you know, he does have a great slider.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and he's going to be on the major league roster unless something happens between, you know, now and the next, 3 weeks? It's quick, right? We don't have much time left.
Well, it'll be 2 weeks Friday.
2 weeks Friday, yeah.
That's insane.
2 weeks Friday. So, yeah, but that's it, you know? Spring is great because, you know, there's a story a day. You can pick a Jay a day if you want and pump it up as a story. We haven't seen Ryu pitch in public yet. And they seem to be kind of hiding him, like, from the opposition. This is the theory. Same with Gausman.
Well, okay, and that may be true. And the Gausman one, what I'm about to say does not apply to Kevin Gausman because Kevin Gossman's good. I have no issues and question marks about Kevin Gausman. But by the end of the last season, Hyunjin Ryu was a very diminished version of Hyunjin Ryu. Even after they shut him down and he came back and they tried to gut it through that game, he was passable, I suppose, and he wasn't as bad as he was before they shut him down. But he is, you don't need him to be the ace of the staff, obviously, but you need him to be able to step on the mound and not get pounded into sand and leaving games after the third inning. Now, of course, it maybe means Nate Pearson's more a part of your rotation. Mm. It's not like going to undo this Blue Jays team, but I'm not penciling Hyunjin Ryu in for a reliable starter this season. I have a couple of question marks about him considering the way his season ended.
Yeah, I think it's legit. And he has been a guy now. He has been a guy that historically also has not been 100% healthy for great long stretches of his career. So you don't quite know whether he was fully, you know, how long and how much of last season he was fully fit. It's not like your radar gun's not going to tell you much with Ryu.
No.
I don't think they're hiding him because they're worried about that. I think because he relies on deception a lot as a pitcher and it's a different rhythm trying to hit against him. You know, if they're going to face especially teams from the AL East, there's no point.
No.
Like, just let him do his work. He knows what he's doing. He's got a routine, you know, and I don't think we're going to see a ton of him. Now, Gausman, you know, already pitched the American League East once upon a time. I guess he's a slightly different pitcher than he was then.
That was before he found it.
Correct. But it's interesting that's become more of a, you know, well, you know, we're not going to run these guys out.
Yeah.
So that the, you know, the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Red Sox, you don't see much because they're down to Fort Myers, but our co-AL East teams are going to see them in spring. Well, we're not going to give them any advantages. God knows if that means anything.
Yeah.
I'm guessing not.
Probably not.
But somebody believes it.
Yeah. I there's lots of tape on Kevin Gausman, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. But I think still stepping in against a guy and hitting against him is a different thing.
I guess. My story of the spring so far is actually seeing in the flesh Aurelvis Martinez. Now, I would love to have been able to say that I've seen Gabriel Moreno, but he's apparently...
I thought you were going to say your boy Malik, but...
I saw more than enough out of Malik Smith in the one game that I watched.
Yeah, I think that may. I think he seems to have a one fatal flaw that's catching a baseball.
Yeah, that's
right?
not what you want to do if you're a potential.
But Aurelvis Martinez, yes.
Gabriel Moreno is kind of hung up apparently in visa nowhere land.
Yeah, Venezuela is a tricky place sometimes.
Okay,
to get in and out of.
So maybe we'll see him this spring. But Aurelvis Martinez, he was just like, he was an idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just a baseball reference page. That was a real live human baseball player. And he hit a home run. And he's talking about hanging out with Teoscar Hernandez and Vlad Jr. and picking their brains. And Vlad says he reminds me of me. And like, there's all these superlatives being thrown around. Now, there's lots of prospects that have had similar treatment.
Yes.
I understand that. But I will say stupidly, like my reptilian brain does think like, yeah, this was a guy I was ready to ship out of town yesterday for whatever, Jose Ramirez, Ketel Marte, and still would probably. But yeah, it's funny.
He looks like a baseball player.
You just see him and it changes things. You see how that can work.
Nice, you know, like the nice short stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Looks, again, just looks like a ball player.
Just spat on that. I think it was from Aaron Nola. Spat on the changeup under his hands that was supposed to be strike three. And he said, no, give me one in the zone. And he did. And then he parked it.
Yeah. And a guy who hasn't played above high A.
Yeah.
So that's
19, well, right? Or is it 20?
He's super exciting, right? Like we will talk more about him if they don't trade him.
Yeah.
But no, he's like, that's the one that now that does happen in spring where guys, the blue chip kind of guys who we do talk about, but are only theoretical, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, honest to God, like all these people talk about prospects, if they're not Keith Law, most of them haven't actually seen these guys, right?
No.
Maybe they've seen a little tape, but especially fans, you know, it's not like no one's watching Arizona Fall League, none of that stuff. Arizona Fall League, there's like 180 people in the stadium, right? Mm-hmm. There's nobody there. So we can talk. Like, we know everything about Aurelvis Martinez, but we haven't, you know, most 99.9% of people have never seen the guy until you see him in spring.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that moment where you go, whoa. You know, that's first time I did see Vladdy play in AA because it's my job.
Yeah.
But that's when most people saw Vladdy for the first time, right? Spring training.
Yep.
There he is. That's the guy we've been told about, or Bo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, add Aurelvis Martinez to your list.
Yeah, he looks like a ball player.
He looks like a ball player.
He does.
So.
And it can go a myriad of different directions, but it is good to see him. So you mentioned the catcher thing. I think the three catchers is unnecessary. You know what I don't think is a big deal? The DHing Alejandro Kirk, and then you're just having two catchers. Like, why is that such a big deal? If Jansen gets hurt, Kirk has to, he leaves
you
the
lose
DH.
You lose your DH, yeah.
So what? Like, how often does that happen? So that happens in-game. The next day, you're making a move for a catcher.
Correct. Yeah. No, it's not. It's a little bit of a risk. It's not a huge risk. You have an emergency catcher then if both guys get hurt. But, I'll be intrigued to see how they do it. Look, I think you can send Reese McGuire down, put him through waivers. He's not going to get claimed. He'll end up in Buffalo.
I agree.
Right? He didn't get claimed last time. He's no different now than he was. And there are a lot of guys like him out there, right? And he does hit from the left side, which is helpful, but he doesn't really hit. So I like him behind the plate. I think he's a very sound defensive catcher. He's nice and quiet back there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, how many guys fit that description? Like, guys play, you know, a dozen years in the major leagues who are good defensive catchers who can't hit a lick. And maybe if he's lucky, he'll be one of those guys. But yeah, I'm not sure there's a massive risk there. It's obviously, you know, obviously if you got the end, you can hear the footsteps coming of Gabriel Moreno. So that, yeah, I'm not sure why you would have to keep that insulation either. But, you know, who is that extra player? Is it Greg Bird? Again, a name hasn't been mentioned in the major leagues for some time.
Now, if Greg Bird, I suppose, played a position other than first base, he would have a better shot of cracking this roster. Now, Greg Bird, once upon a time, was a very highly touted prospect.
Yes, he was.
For the New York Yankees.
First baseman of the future. Left-handed power, right?
Yeah.
Going to pound baseballs into the right field, the short right field bleachers.
I remember thinking at the time, because Travis Shaw was coming up for the Red Sox at the same time, and I looked at the minor league track record, and I said, no, despite the fact that Travis Shaw is succeeding in the major leagues, Greg Bird is going to be the player.
Mm-hmm.
And
just to show you.
Yeah, lack of performance and injuries, too. He's been injured throughout his entire career, but he's able to take walks. He's hit like 120, but he's had like a 250 on base when he's had a shot at the major leagues. I will say that that's a... Of the possibilities, and the Blue Jays did a great job trading for Matt Chapman, and this team is still, I think, on paper the best in the American League East, to have Greg Bird, because if he's on this roster, he's going to play. Like, there's not nine position players that you're enamored with playing offensively every single game. It's like him, or it's Randall Grichuk, or, you know, I guess it could be Alejandro Kirk, but Kirk is going to be catching. So if you're playing Lourdes, George Springer, and Teoscar Hernandez across the outfield, and your infield is whatever, and then whatever at second base, and Alejandro Kirk catching, like, what's your best offensive best offensive option at DH at the current moment? I couldn't tell you.
Is Grichuk right now.
Yeah, so that means if Grichuk is in the lineup, though, you'd rather have his gloves. So it's like Teoscar Hernandez is the DH, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah, so you have four outfielders for three positions. The other guy... And if the other guy's going to have a day off every once in a while, you are going to sit guys too. So you need somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we probably spend too much time talking about the bench, especially in a league with the DH. Mm-hmm. Especially on a team where you're not going to be pinch hitting for almost anybody ever, right? Like, let's, you know, you're not going to bring Greg Bird in to hit for almost anybody on this team.
Yeah. Like, the answer would be Santiago Espinal,
yes,
maybe.
Yes, that's it. That's you. Just, you've hit the answer right there, and that's the only answer. So, yeah, the 25th and 26th guys on this roster or the 27th and 28th guys, and, you know, and those guys may come and go. Mm-hmm. And they probably will come and go as the season progresses.
Kevin Biggio apparently also has an elbow strain. Like, this guy just, he can't, like, I feel for him because he's my type of player because I love walks. I like guys that have a command of the strike zone so much. And he's like, honestly, he's one of the best in the major leagues of baseball at identifying what's a strike and what's a ball. Problem is, when it's a strike, sometimes he swings and misses quite often. But yeah, it's just like part of his early career has been star-crossed a bit, right?
Yeah.
Like the injury thing.
Well, and it's funny. Like, I think people, because of his last name, people kind of assume that he's a, you know, can't miss. He was a can't miss guy, but if, you know, he's not, right?
No, he turned himself into a major leaguer. He wasn't supposed to be that.
That's exactly right. Right. So, and yeah, he's an overachiever, you know, in every way. And, but I think this year, it's a big year for him, right? Because, you know, and again, if he said had an injury setback, that is not good because he needs to get settled in and comfortable and kind of get back to where he was, which is not as, you know, he doesn't have to be a superstar and he's not going to be a superstar, you know, but to be, you know, even a platoon second baseman.
That's right.
With, as you say, a great eye at the plate. Every once in a while, he's going to, you know, he does have power. Mm. It's funny, though, when we had Barkin talking about his swing the other day, that was pretty interesting, too, wasn't it? Kevin Barker was on. And
a lot of picks, nits to pick.
But they were, I think he had it right.
Yes.
You know, I think, he's really good at kind of doing a technical analysis of a guy's swing. And he wants him to succeed, too, but he said the guy he saw this year is still kind of the same guy.
All right.
So, you know, maybe in the major leagues that's not sustainable. I don't know. I root for him. He's a good
kid.
Yeah,
so do I.
And he's kind of – he's turned himself into something. And, you know, being the son of the famous guy, you know, this is a double-edged sword, right? Dad's in the Hall of Fame and you're carrying that name and you decide to play baseball. Like, could have become a dentist, right?
That's right. Doesn't pay quite as well.
No, maybe not. but that would be – look, if he's not right – and again, we just talked about the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not right, then that probably puts you in a different... Like, he's going to have to be 100% right to make the opening day roster. Otherwise, he's going to be on the IL. Right?
Yeah.
And then somebody else is going to get a shot.
Yep. And we'll see who that is. And again, perhaps there's another move to be made. It does feel like there's one more move to be made before opening day. I could be wrong, though. Speaking of moves, the biggest free agent of the offseason landed somewhere, and it was... not a place that you or I or Jose Berríos would have anticipated.
No.
The Minnesota freaking Twins signed Carlos Correa to a 3-year deal worth $105 million. So that's it. Honestly feels like an NFL deal because it's not $105 million. It's $35 million for this year.
Yeah, and then he's gone, right?
Like, it's opt out after every single year of the deal. And if you're a Yankee fan, you should be like outside Yankee Stadium. You should be in the Bronx every day. With your pitchfork talking about how Hal Steinbrenner screwed this up somehow because you've got Isaiah Kiner-Falefa playing shortstop for you and you got Josh Donaldson playing third, I guess, but you could have kept your shortstop prospects, which you just love. They're going to be the next Derek Jeter incarnate. You could have kept those guys and had the best shortstop by the numbers a season ago for a 1-year commitment.
Well, how about Houston? Right? Like,
yeah, that, Houston
like
too.
That's the other one. Like, yeah, the Yankees for sure on a short term. Like, if it was this kind of deal. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the Astros have an even bigger unknown at shortstop.
Well, they do. And they, you know, and again, every arrow at this stage, you know, until that signing was announced, every arrow was pointing to him going back to Houston.
Yeah,
right? Because they kind of needed him. And he's obviously had great success there. And they were discussing a long term deal. And the terms kind of sounded like they were in the ballpark from what I could hear. And then for him to take a, as you say, essentially, you know, like the only way it turns into more than a 1-year deal is if he gets hurt.
That's right.
Right? So if it doesn't, yeah, if he has, he blows out his knee or something, then he'll be back in Minnesota for a second year for the guaranteed money. But no, I'm shocked by it. And like you say, Jose Berríos, you would kind of wonder, hang on a second. You guys, we couldn't even have a conversation about extending. I wanted to extend. I actually liked it here. I'm your own guy. You know, I'm really good. And we didn't even have a conversation. You sent me away. You traded me away. So clearly you're in. And plus, you, by the way, you also got rid of Josh Donaldson. So you would appear to be kind of in teardown mode a little bit, except now you're in kind of tear up mode
yeah.
as well for a year. Maybe.
You know what? Like, so in the interest of equal time, like, we rip Major League Baseball since the CBA was signed about all the teams that are tearing it down, like the Reds and the A's, and the Pirates are doing nothing. But there's a couple of teams, though. There are, like, it's a roundabout way, and it's, you know, send some stuff out and bring some stuff in. The Twins, the Royals are doing stuff. Like, there's a few teams. Cleveland's not, but...
I'm more confused by the Twins, though, because the Royals are building something up from the ground up, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be good. You know, and I'm not sure how long they'll be able to keep the window open because they'll eventually have to pay guys. But yeah, there's something coming in with Kansas City. But what are the, like, you know, the Twins have gone through a stretch where they have been mostly competitive. No, like, kind of every other year, right? They've had that weird every other year pattern. But what exactly is this?
Well, and yeah, they're in a division now with an emerging superpower in the White Sox, who I think are, you know,
they're going to lap the field there, aren't they?
It feels like it.
Yeah.
And who knows? Cleveland has good pitching, but if they can stay healthy,
Detroit's on the road getting better, and they just put some money in. Right?
And their number one overall pick is going to play this year, Torkelson.
So they're, you know, and they went out and invested in a manager. You might not like the manager, but they invested in a manager. So they're you kind of know where they're going. I think, you know, I think Kansas City's doing the Kansas City thing.
Yeah,
Cleveland, they're right now. I think they're hoping that their pitching is good enough to keep them in this year, and if they're not, then they can trade Jose Ramirez to the Jays.
Yeah.
Minnesota's the one I have a hard time. Like, what are they?
Yeah, I don't know. It's better than the alternative, though. If you're a Twins fan, you're perhaps counting down the days until you can watch Kirk Cousins again. Like, you it's intriguing to go into a season like this. And I think Ken Rosenthal wrote about it today. It's like, okay, if it goes pear shaped, guess who has great value? Carlos Correa at the deadline. For the rest of the season, you can trade him to the New York Yankees, and then they'll be so desperate that they will trade you those shortstop prospects. Yeah, it's better than just folding up shop and saying this is it. We're in it to lose 110 this year.
Yeah, and again, they got rid of the Donaldson money, so it's almost a push, right? It's a little more, but it's a bit of a push. No one saw this one coming.
No, right? They didn't.
No one saw this one coming.
Quickly, the Red Sox also signed Trevor Story to a 6-year, $140 million. That's the way I feel about Trevor Story. The splits are so insane, and I was reading some stuff today where they were trying to put some spin on the ball.
I want you to talk about this because I know you. Because we talked about this.
We got lots of time.
I'm thinking, hang on a second. He has dramatic splits, right?
Like, so
Coors Field, non Coors Field,
yes,
and better in Coors Field. That's not shocking. Offenses, and you know, Coors Field, it is the Mile High City, air's thin. Ball sale. Everybody knows that, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the alternate explanation for the fact that he's a way better hitter in Coors Field
than
sea level?
I will just tell you, so the whole thing starts with, you know, there's been guys that have had almost as dramatic or more dramatic splits than Trevor Story who have gone on to greener pastures and not
just fine
and not been total duds. And I don't think there's been enough studies to confirm this, but it does appear that not only are your home splits inflated when you play in Denver, but your road splits are deflated. So now my natural inclination would be that that's because you become so accustomed to playing half your games at altitude where, I mean, in the rare times the Blue Jays have played there, it is bizarre. Like, the breaking balls do not break. Like,
yes.
Oh, man. Remember Marco Estrada was like, I'm playing on the moon.
Yes.
Like, what is this?
Yes.
It's not just that the ball flies, it's that the pitchers, they have to pitch differently. Like, some of the pitches are just out of their arsenal, that it is such a different game that it actually hurts you when you go on the road. That would be,
I guess,
the theory.
I guess. Now, you may, and, you know, again, maybe it evens out to some degree.
Yeah.
Maybe. I guess. It could. But, you know, but it's hard to look at his numbers and not think that he's a Coors Field phenomenon.
That's what I think.
Right? And they just made quite a commitment to him.
Yes, they did. 6 years, 100. He got the same deal that Javi Baez got, which in Javi Baez, there's some question marks about,
there
too.
Yeah, definitely are.
Like, that guy swings at absolutely everything, and he kind of rebounded with the Mets. But, yeah. And Baez has some earlier opt-outs, I think. I think Story can opt out after year four, I think. Baez can opt out after the second year or whatever. But, yeah, it seems like a lot of money to invest on a guy who's not going to be playing his same position because he's going to play second base.
That's the other thing. He's got to change position. Look, I admit, I hate the Red Sox and everything about them.
We know that.
So,
yes.
I'm rooting against him now.
Yes.
Like, whereas I was, you know, kind of neutral about him. You know, if they had the Jays made a move for him, I think we would have had the same discussion without the hatred part.
Yeah.
I'm not totally convinced.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say if you're gonna be a right-handed hitter, better play at Fenway Park. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, home field advantages or whatever. But I'm not worried about the Red Sox.
No. Okay. Last baseball thing. I was going to get to something non-baseball, but now we've gone 25 minutes on baseball. I want to do one last baseball thing, and then we'll save some non-baseball things that are non-trade deadline things to after Jeff Merrick.
And remember, this is the palate cleanser for everybody today who've sat through hours and hours and hours of trade deadline. We're just giving you something else, a little amuse-bouche here.
That's very good. I saw Shohei Ohtani today. Speaking of the images from spring training that stand out, and he looked amazing.
Yeah,
and like I know, we talked about this at the end of last year. What happens if he's the same guy next year? Like, what happens though? Honestly, if he's the same or similar guy this year, just like passable pitcher, or he was better than passable.
Yeah,
a great offensive player. He has to win every MVP award in the American League until that's over. And unless you change the rules, like honestly, there is no way for him not to win the American League MVP if he's that. If he stays healthy for an entire season, he's the MVP every single year. And I honestly think we have to change the rule if that happens again.
Most people kind of got bored with Trout.
That's the other element, the potential. Because LeBron James, there was a stretch there. He should have won the MVP every single year, but he didn't.
Yeah, because whoever votes, whatever the voting body is, just get kind of bored.
Yeah.
Right? Say, well, let's give it to this other guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. Is that how Josh Donaldson got his MVP? Was that one of those years? I'm trying to remember what Trout's numbers were that year.
There was definitely an argument for Trout. Josh Donaldson won that MVP award by going into Anaheim and outplaying Mike Trout in a 3-game series August.
Well, that'd do it.
Or September, whenever that was.
I don't think they'll never change the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's a unicorn. But as long as he's continues to be a unicorn, you're right. Like, how do you beat him?
You can't. Like, there's no numbers.
If Vladdy couldn't beat him last year with those numbers, you're not going to beat him.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't know what the number would have been. I couldn't make a logical case for Vladdy even if he hit 60 bombs last year.
Neither could I.
Yeah. All right. That was a palate cleanser. Hope your palate is now cleansed. Back into deadline stuff.
Oh, good.
With Jeff Merrick. Of the Jeff Merrick Show as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Annis and Stephen Brunt, and we heard David Amber tell us about the fun post-deadline show party that he's attending. We got the invite. I assume Jeff Merrick is there as well. He of the Jeff Merrick Show joins us now. How's it going, Jeff?
I am in the parking lot at the Ajax Community Center awaiting my son's playoff game. Ajax Pickering Raiders, AAA, against Central Ontario Wolves. At 7:05.
Yeah,
no party for this guy.
What's wrong with your priorities? My God.
I know. I'm a poor colleague. I've chosen my family over drinking with my colleagues. How will I ever live this down?
I'll come back to haunt you. All right. Where to start here? So Kyle Dubas seems really mad. And Kyle Davidson over this thing. Well, I'm very curious, and people don't know that. Apparently there was a report that the Toronto Maple Leafs and Kyle Dubas inquired on Marc-Andre Fleury and another player, and I guess it was brought up to him today. And you know what's weird about it is that he basically confirmed the whole thing, Jeff. Like if he had said nothing or kind of been wishy-washy on it, he would have had plausible deniability there. But he confirmed it and then got really upset. What did you make of that?
From whose point of view? From Chicago or Toronto or just the entire thing? It's pretty rare that we see it all. That we see it ever. Normally what happens in that situation, because it's happened before, and I've uncovered things and colleagues have uncovered things, and it can be quite uncomfortable from one general manager to another. But generally that is never brought out into the open. Like normally that would be one GM who calls the other general manager and they scream and yell and swear they'll never talk to each other until it's time to do business, and they quietly go about doing business again. Like that's normally the way these things are handled. But then for Dubas to respond the way that he did, essentially saying, we're not used to that. You'll have to ask, Kyle Davidson of Chicago. You know, that's not how we do business around here. Like, trust me, that was a punch. I mean, Stephen, you're a boxing guy. Mm-hmm. That was a punch from the seller. It was very calm and subdued, but that one came from the seller, from Cal Dubas to Davidson on that one. That was unique territory. I don't know that I can't even remember the last time we were ever part of something like that before. But
yeah.
You know what I think it is at the same time? I think that is, from the Toronto point of view, from Kyle Dubas's point of view, like everybody in this organization in the last 2 months, the nerves are right up against the skin right now. And there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of fear. And, you know, there's a lot of doubt about this hockey team. And I think that any sort of transgression, you know, slight, you know, minimal, actual, I think is greeted with a very emotional reaction. And that was, even though it was in hushed tones, it very much felt like it was an emotional reaction.
But, you know, no, because that came out, Jeff, like it's impossible not to look at that and say, man, that it would have been a very different trade deadline day discussion around the Leafs had they done that. Of course, again, Fleury would have had to been willing. But, had they done that deal, that is a totally different discussion about where the organization is, where Kyle Dubas was, how much they were willing to go all in, et cetera, right?
See, and the big problem, you're right, and I think the big problem with it now is, you know, now that that's public, Kyle's got to go back and say, hey, you're our guys.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Jack Campbell, you're our guy. Hey, Peter Mrazek, Eric Shulgin, you're our guys. When really out there was, you know, the general manager was trying to upgrade. Now, I know we always treat goaltenders with kid gloves. Oh, these sensitive, delicate flowers, pardon the pun in this case, you know, these sensitive, delicate flowers. But, you know, the defensemen get talked about like this all the time. Forwards get talked about like this all the time. And we seem to think that that's all fair game. But there is a real sensitivity, it seems, around goaltenders. That, you know, Stephen, like it has to be kid gloves. For whatever reason, it's always been that way. I mean, John Tortorella, you know, when he had Nikolai Habibulin, wasn't shy publicly in Tampa about blasting him when he had a bad game. And it was rare. And it was, to be honest with you, kind of refreshing. And Tortorella's point was always, you know, the goaltender is no different than my, you know, left side defenseman or my right winger or my second line center. They're all members of this team. And as much as they deserve praise, you know, what's the old saying? There's an 18-inch difference between a pat on the back and a kick in the ass. Mm. He said, like, you know, I said, if I'm going to rip my center, I can also rip my goaltender too. We're just not used to it around goalies. But I think the main point is, from Kyle Dubas's point of view, now he's got to go back and say, hey, Jack Campbell, you're my guy. When we really know, in the back of his mind, he isn't his guy.
Well, except
what another guy.
Except, like, if they don't, like, if Jack Campbell, especially Peter Mrazek, since they put him on waivers. But if those guys actually were feeling super secure, like they're kind of delusional, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's why I don't think any of this. See, I think that there's two different discussions. There's how we think goaltenders react, and I think there's actually how. Like, Peter Mrazek knows exactly where he is as a goaltender. Like the one thing that I've learned, like I haven't learned much in my career covering sports, but I've learned one thing specifically, and it might be the only thing that I've ever learned, and that is you can't lie to players. They know. Mm-hmm. Players know who's doing well. Players know who's awful. Players know who belongs, and players know who doesn't belong. And players know whether they're on an uptick or they're on a downswing right now. Like, there are no lies amongst players. Everybody knows. Like, that's the one thing. Doesn't matter what you say publicly, you can't lie to a player. They know exactly where they're at. But you're right. Like, these guys, you know, and Jack Campbell knows what the last 2 months of his season has been about. How many times have you seen him apologizing after games?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
Peter Mrazek knows. Like, he understands all the criticism. Like, it's always folly when, you know, you hear a player say, I never read what's written about me, whether it's, you know, in newsprint or digital stone, or, I never listen to the radio, I don't listen to podcasts, I don't watch television. Like, okay, come on. Like, there's about 0% chance that any of that is true. They know. Like, they know. There's put it this way. There should be no surprise that Kyle Dubas was in the goaltending market. Zero.
No, but I think the fact that he might be sensitive about letting Jack Campbell know about that kind of plays into what we think Jack Campbell might be. And I don't know the guy. All I know him through is through his post-game media availabilities where, he apologizes a bunch. He seems like he's very up and down emotionally, and he's talked about trying to stay a little more level-headed. Like, that would make sense. If he was affected by the fact that he does not have a contract next year, if he was affected by the fact that they just handed his, I guess, de facto backup, although they were supposed to be 1-1A at the beginning of the season, almost $12 million, like, that would jibe with me, that Kyle Dubas would try to protect him emotionally. That fits the narrative that I've seen, Jeff.
Yeah. You know, it's almost like, you know, we always, you know, and I guess some people still do, you know, rip goaltenders that seem emotionless after losses. Like, here's the thing that's always bugged me, Ben, this sort of performative, you know, anger that you have to have after a loss, or, you know, this performance you have to put on about how upset you are. You know, I think that the best temperament for any athlete to have is sort of, you know, one of indifference in a lot of ways, specifically goaltenders. Like, you have to be able to park things quickly. And, you know, it's been said before that, you know, when you're a goaltender that rides the emotional wave, it just makes a really long season even longer. Like, can you imagine, like, what's the old line? They're the two most difficult jobs in all of Canada, okay? Number one is prime minister. Number two is starting netminder for the Montreal Canadiens. Like, because it can be such an emotional roller coaster, you can get caught up in it. And I would extend that to say number one is prime minister. Number two is starting goaltender for any Canadian market. That's how difficult it is. But the narrative of the general manager protecting the goaltender, I think by and large that's pretty much true, at least publicly, for all 32 teams across the NHL.
So where does this, you know, so they Kyle Dubas at least contemplated a more all-in approach to the deadline. Again, the assumption being that Fleury still would have had to approve, then would have had to want to come to Toronto. We don't know. Maybe he wasn't coming. But at least this was, because of this leak, we now know that was discussed. Instead, they approached it in a, you know, they made a significant move, but not like your life depends on it kind of move at the deadline from Kyle Dubas's point of view. What are the consequences? So they're going to go into the first round as an underdog no matter who they play. That was going to be true probably anyway. Yes. But what are the consequences now? You know, like, I mean, goaltending is not going to necessarily cost them a first round. There might be other reasons they lose a first round, but let's just say that they lose in the first round and their goaltending stinks. Like, where does that leave Kyle Dubas?
See, this to me is a weird one, because I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and I know that, you know, for Toronto, there's no such thing as an 82-game season. There's 82 one-game seasons. Like, that's the way that it feels like. And right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs are a top-five team. Do they have goaltending problems? Yes, they do. Do they have injuries to key players? Absolutely. But I know there's still the first round thing, and I get it. I think that, you know, probably everybody in that organization won't feel safe if they bow out in the first round again. Like, I think that Kyle Dubas will talk a lot about how, you know, the buck stops with him and he's going to be accountable for whatever happens to this team. I just have a hard time, you know, because I think about teams like the Washington Capitals and how long it took them to finally click and win a Stanley Cup. Ditto for the St. Louis Blues. I just still have a hard time with the idea that even if it's another first round flameout, considering who's around them and who they're going to face in the first round, that there should be jobs on the line here. Now, having said that, this is a really difficult market. And if this team bows out in the first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning or Florida Panthers or whomever they've, then I think that the, you know, I think that Toronto, the Toronto sports market when it comes to hockey, is a volcano. And I think that volcano will demand a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's just going to be, well, they're going to have to swap out, you know, their bottom pairing D or so. I think the volcano is going to want, you know, a significant sacrifice, you know, carried up to the top and thrown into it.
Well, Jeff, go watch your kid play. Maybe one day your kid will be playing next to the volcano. Who knows?
And we'll be talking about him getting traded and general managers whispering behind his back.
You'll have the inside scoop, though. Can't wait for that.
All the good stuff. Yeah, that'll be fun reporting on my kid. Yeah, he shows promise, but he lacks focus. Been that way since he was 10.
Thanks, Jeff. See ya.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, gents.
Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show. That's it. Yeah. I can't t- tell you what Jack Campbell's like, but I can tell you what I think he's like.
Yes.
It would be all the things that we've been given all these breadcrumbs about, and that would play into the whole thing. And the last one being that Kyle Dubas tried to protect him, didn't want him to think that he didn't believe in his ability to bounce back to the guy that he saw at the beginning of the season, end of last year.
He does seem kind of open book. Ish, doesn't he?
Right? A little bit.
Yeah. But maybe, I guess. Which is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he still kind of know, wouldn't he? Like that, you know, this hasn't gone that well, and
I would think.
It's been tough since, you know, I was really great at the beginning and then I've been lousy and everybody in Toronto's been talking about it. And he wouldn't be that oblivious, I would say. But yeah. Look, it's nice that Kyle cares about his feelings.
That's what you want out of a goaltender in the most difficult place to be a goaltender. Somebody you have to think about, their feelings.
It is a horrible job. Like, I'm not sure, like in the olden days, right, the guys who got ground up, they're like the Terry Sawchucks and the Roger Croziers and all these guys who had horrible kind of, you know, what we would now talk about as mental health issues because playing that position. You know, they were also playing without masks and facing guys who had curved sticks who were shooting at 100 miles an hour. But it is, you know, it's a very lonely island.
No doubt. Last thing for me on this is that I think the more I think about it, the smart move would be not to fire Kyle Dubas if depending on how it looks in the first round, but you lose a hard, like you're right there neck and neck with like a Panthers team that did go all in and has a ton of talent or a best team of a generation in the Tampa Bay Lightning and you lose in 6 or 7 games probably is not the wise decision to fire Kyle Dubas. He might still get fired. And it's in the overall, like how different is this franchise as far as its outlook on winning a Stanley Cup? If they win that series against the Montreal Canadiens, not any, like if they win against Montreal and then lose to Winnipeg, like, okay.
Or they could have been like Montreal and run the table and play in the final.
Maybe. But yeah, just winning one round would have changed everything. At least there would have been something. Like if they'd beaten Montreal, that's no big deal. Like,
nope.
You beat Montreal and then you lost to Winnipeg. But they would have had something.
Something's better than nothing.
Something that you could at least, if you were a Kyle Dubas defender, you'd say, well, look, there was at least incremental improvement and they had that regular season, but there has been nothing in the postseason.
Well, the problem with this season is that for 2 months, they looked like the best team in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And they are having a guy who's having the best season of anybody to ever wear the uniform. With a long history.
That's right.
Right? And if that just kind of gets frittered away at the end of the year and they lose in 6 games to Florida or whoever.
Well, and especially if it's because of the goaltending.
And the goaltending is bad. Then it's going to be hard to kind of park that, I would say. From a fan point of view. From an organizational point of view, different thing. But again, the architecture, we know who the architect is. Now, the architect has a boss. Mm-hmm. So he also has some responsibility here. And they signed some contracts and they kind of decided that the die was cast. But no, I think Merrick's right. Like I've seen this act too many times here, right? Like something will have to give. You can't just come back and say, well, we'll try again next year.
That's right. Yeah, you're probably right. Raptors, you know what? I think Alex Wong had the greatest take on the 2022 Toronto Raptors. And it was this tweet. You really can't pencil in any wins or losses for the Raptors. That's it. You can't pencil in any wins over the Magic or the Pistons, and you can't pencil in any losses against the Suns or the Nuggets on a back-to-back. Like they, and for that reason, and not that reason alone, it's like Pascal Siakam is playing, I know he's an all-star for this team, and he was like second team All-NBA. He's playing at a higher level than he's ever played at.
Yep.
As a member of the Toronto Raptors. And Scottie Barnes, maybe he already hit that rookie wall like we were talking to Doug Smith about. And maybe he's Scottie Barnes is getting better, seemingly, day in, day out. End of games, he looks like a rookie at times. But I guarantee you now, and I'm not saying that they would beat any of these teams, but I guarantee you there's nobody in the Eastern Conference that wants to play this team in a 7-game series.
No. And the finish of that game was kind of perfect last night because, you know, Philly's got lots to play for, right? Mm-hmm. And they're playing for first place. And they're down by 2 and last possession essentially. And Harden's got the ball and he's going to go and draw a foul, and take the 2 free throws. And we're going to overtime and takes it right at Chris Boucher, who stands his ground and takes a vicious elbow right in the chops.
Yep.
And draws the offensive foul. And they, there's your Raptor moment, right?
Yep.
All cliches apply.
Yep.
Right. They are, and with no Fred VanVleet.
Yep. No Fred VanVleet and no OG Anunoby.
Yeah.
Going on weeks and weeks and weeks. And Malachi Flynn was actually turning into something. You haven't had him in weeks and weeks and weeks. And they almost beat the Lakers again. But yeah, I mean, that was one of the more painful losses
that
of the season.
With Westbrook picking Scottie Barnes' pocket, that was not as much fun as last night.
No, it wasn't. But again, yeah, to Alex Wong's point, can never pencil in a win or a loss for this Toronto Raptors team. This is an interesting report out of Sky Sports today, which I guess, like, it got picked up a little bit, but it hasn't gained that much steam. Larry Tannenbaum owns 25% of MLSE.
Yes.
Sky Sports out of the UK is reporting that he and a partner are bidding on Chelsea, and, like, the deadline was last Friday for, like, the last bids to be thrown into the hat, and then they're going to come down to a short list, and it has yet to be reported whether he's on the short list, but that's a big deal. Like, that's no joke.
There's a lot of people scrambling in this town right now trying to figure out what this means. I can tell you, just because, number one, who the partner might be. But remember, Larry Tannenbaum was involved. He did sort of try and buy an NFL team, the Buffalo Bills, with John Bon Jovi. Is that banner still up? I think they took it down, right?
So he has,
He has essentially, he's a minority partner in MLSE, but he essentially controls it.
Right?
He's a kind of a control because of the partnership structure. But there has been a sense that maybe there are bigger fish to fry for him. Like, this is big, right? The Chelsea Football Club is going to sell for an enormous amount of money.
I saw approaching £3 billion.
Yes.
Pounds.
Yes. Yeah. So we're pushing towards
$5 million.
Yeah. So this is not, this is not chump change. And there will be other bidders. We know there are other bidders. So we don't know he's going to. But I think, just the idea that he wants more.
Yeah.
Or different. Let's put it. Maybe it's different.
Well, and my initial reaction was that, okay, maybe he has to divest himself of the MLSE stuff. But like John Henry, he owns everything.
Yeah, they believe they own part owner of Liverpool. And yes, so you don't necessarily have to. The Glazers own Manchester United and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Yeah, you could own both, but but I'll tell you, the chance to buy one of those powers in the Premiership, they don't come along every day. Like, you can go buy something, a team in the Championship if you want, but you don't get to buy one of the big four very often.
Well, and you might see Chelsea and TFC play a friendly at BMO Field if that happens.
Man, I bet by tomorrow, well, we'll try and know more about this tomorrow.
Yeah. In a couple of minutes here. Last one. And this only maybe deserves a couple of minutes. CFL fans are freaking out, Steven.
Yes.
I brought this up, I guess, a couple of months ago, and I guess it hasn't been shot down yet by CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. The idea of going to four downs, of not being the CFL anymore, it's, I guess, a realistic possibility, or they've allowed it to fester and be in the news for longer than most CFL fans would like.
It was definitely in the conversation when they were dancing with The Rock and the XFL people. Now they have a deal with a company called Genius Sports. You can look them up, who are kind of in the technology betting and broadcasting business. It's a little unclear exactly what they do, but they seem to do many things. The CFL's given them an equity position. They've kind of carved off a marketing and wing of the league business, and these guys have an equity position, so they own part of the league now, and the idea is that they will drive all this new revenue by doing like doing a kids broadcast.
All right. Okay,
so sure. That was out there, but the suggestion, and again, the guy who stirred this pot, of course, is our good friend Arash Madan, who drives CFL people crazy, who said that these Genius Sports guys want four downs. I think they should be open to suggestion on a lot of stuff because the business is tricky. I'm just not sure where four downs get you.
No, I don't know. Like a lesser version of the NFL, and you have to retrofit. You have to change the whole rules because if you go to four downs, you can't have CFL rules and have four downs with a 1 yard neutral zone and a big field. Anyways,
I don't think you'd ever punt, would you?
I don't think you would. Anyways, we'll continue to follow that story, and more. We'll be back tomorrow. This has been The Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.